Hi, my name is J. Lauren Sangster, and welcome to my podcast, Flying Over the Hedge. The name of the podcast is a reference to my newly released book, titled The Girl Who Flew Over the Honeysuckle Hedge, Her Lifelong Journey of Coping and Healing with CPTSD, or Complex Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder. I am that girl. In my book, I discuss various traumas, beginning at an early age. I also discuss various coping and healing methods I have used as I navigate life, to include humor and music. Today I'm going to discuss the volunteer work I do with Freedom to Choose Project and how it has helped me to become better at practicing self-compassion and to heal more deeply as I practice compassion toward others. Here's why. So doing volunteer work can help to reduce stress and increase feelings of purpose because you're involved in doing good. It improves self-esteem and it can build confidence. And this can lead to a more positive perspective, improving our mood and our overall satisfaction with life. It can also improve our physical health. And of course, that depends on whether the particular volunteer work you're doing has you physically active. In a nutshell, it helps us feel more connected, both with the people we're working with and the people we're providing for. And volunteering may help us gain new skills and work experience. In my prior podcasts, I've discussed a few of my traumas, including the death of my husband, Michael. After his death, I found myself finally in a state of anger at the universe that I had never experienced before. I couldn't find meaning or purpose. It was after a not-so-funny thing that happened, and I explained what that was in my book, that caused me to finally find my purpose. I'm a member of VolunteerMatch.org. Think of it like Match.com, only instead of a website trying to match you with a romantic partner, this one tries to match you with a volunteer opportunity. I've been on the site for several years, and if you're interested in the opportunity to do some volunteer work, you might want to check it out. It's pretty great. Also, please remember that any websites I mention during my podcast, I will have on my website, flyingoverthehedge.com. So with my desire to find purpose, I opened an email, and I receive one roughly every 4 to 6 weeks from volunteermatch.org, and I began to read the new opportunities for volunteering. My eye caught this particular volunteer reader position needed for some project I'd never heard of. Freedom to Choose Project. So when I read that the project is geared to help those impacted by incarceration to, and I quote, step free of past identifications and help them re-identify themselves as valuable members of society, it touched a really strong nerve with me. In an earlier podcast, I reveal that I was held captive in the French Alps and some of what happened there. And of course, I write far more intensely about this in my book. I also write how the person who did horrific things to me was never brought to justice. A few years after the traumas I endured, I took a memoir writing course. As part of the course, I had homework to complete. And for one lesson, I was to write a letter to someone and tell them how they had impacted my life, good or bad. As you might imagine, I jumped right on that assignment. To make a long story short, because I want to have plenty of time for my guests, Rhonda and Eddie, who work for Freedom to Choose Project, let me tell you what I wrote. I stated that I wished the man I called Giles in my book to serve his time in prison for what he'd done to me, to seek help for his clear mental health concerns, while in prison to help others find ways to heal, and when he was released, to be a safe, positive and productive member of society. Freedom to Choose Project ticked all the boxes of what I'd wanted for the man who injured me in so many ways. I knew what I read about Freedom to Choose would not help Giles, and I explained why in my book, but I told myself that I could be a part of the healing process for other men and women who wanted to gain a new perspective on life. To be honest, I was of two minds when I sent the email inquiring further about the volunteer reading I would be doing. I wondered if I might be further emotionally hurt, or whether I might heal more deeply. I was scared, but I also followed my gut instinct. And I discussed gut instinct in episode 3 and how we may strengthen our emotional intelligence to better listen to our gut instinct. My gut instinct was telling me this could be very good for me. I went through the process everyone must go through to read what FTC terms the growth work for the women and men who choose to complete the lessons in the program. I then received training and instructions, and I read my first growth work. I will always recall feeling an immediate sense of purpose as I did my best to provide compassionate feedback, because I knew, I just knew, I had something to offer every single person I read for. And I still feel this way over 3 years later. I don't want to keep talking because I want to bring on two members of the Freedom to Choose Project. As I said, the Rhonda and Eddie, and they can tell you more about themselves. And then we'll discuss how they came to be a part of FTC and the work they do currently do for FTC today. And by the way, you can read more about the Freedom to Choose Project at freedomtochooseproject.org. Rhonda and Eddie, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you so much for having us, Lauren.
I feel so honored that you are willing to join me today. I'm going to begin with you, Rhonda, I guess because I got to know and work with you first. Perhaps you can provide some information about yourself. And then, Eddie, when Rhonda is finished, I'll ask you to do the same.
I'm formerly incarcerated. I was sentenced to almost the equivalent of two life sentences. I spent 28 years in prison. And for 20 of those years, I worked with the Freedom to Choose Project. And I paroled a little bit over 2 years ago, and I've been employed with them ever since.
I love that. And Eddie, how about you?
So I was incarcerated for almost 17 years. I went in when I was 27. I am an ex-lifer, which you would call people that were sentenced to with a life sentence. And I have been recently released and a returning citizen for the past 19 months.
I'm so glad you're both here with me today. I want to ask a few questions, and as you know, please discuss only what you feel comfortable with. So how did you both come to the Freedom to Choose Project, meaning while you were incarcerated? And Rhonda, maybe you can go first again.
Well, I came to it early on in my prison sentence. The first 7 years, I realized that I felt very separate from society, and I judged myself pretty harshly. I had extremely bad self-esteem, and I would probably describe myself back then as being voiceless. And I attribute to that to a childhood of poverty, neglect, and violence in my home. And I developed this idea that I was separate from society, that somehow I was different, and I was a victim of that difference. And I wanted to test myself and see if that was really true. So I started working on education and educating myself about self-esteem and, you know, what were my responsibilities. And as a result of that, I read a lot of self-help books, and I realized that there was people who actually teach self-esteem and help with these things. So I ended up writing about 200 letters over the course of a year and asking people to come into the Valley State Prison for Women, which was the largest women's prison in the state of California at the time, and asked if they would just come in and do a talk, because I felt like it was people outside of myself that had the answers for me that would help me change my life. And I felt like it would help all of us. And I could write letters because that I didn't really have to use my voice. And then it turns out that those letters started getting answered and people started coming into the prison and change started coming. And it happened gradually over a period of time with a lot of different people from the community showing up for me, communicating with me through letters and then eventually in workshops. And it was through that communication that I found my sense of belonging within my community. And I felt like I was grafted in to a larger idea of what I had before. And it was actually at my very first Freedom to Choose workshop. Back then, it was University of Santa Monica that originally brought it in, that I worked with my very first volunteer, Ray Hutcherson, who is just a matter-of-fact type person. And he said, you know, I don't have the answers for you. You're the only one that has those. Like, they're inside of you. And I don't have a magic key. I don't have anything like that. You have to do that. And I think that was my first time, like, I had ever been faced with, you know, it's my decision. I have a choice in my life. I'm not a victim of anything. My choice. And that's when my change happened gradually. But on that day, that was the catalyst of me changing my victim mentality.
That's terrific. How about you, Eddie?
So for me, when I first entered prison, at that time, there was no rehabilitation programs. They were closing down locations. And you go into a prison setting, a maximum security prison, and all you sense is the tension, confusion, the fear, the anxiousness. You're walking on eggshells in every movement that you do. On top of the fact that you have your family's away, you're feeling the feelings of loneliness, powerlessness, helplessness, and also having to deal with facing the reality and the facts of what you had committed and all the emotions that come with that. The burdens, the shame, and the guilt. So for me, as the years went by, I knew that there was something that was missing. I knew that there was a yearning for something, for closure, for healing. I never knew how that was going to look. So over the course of the years and getting to know other people, little by little, as I continued to program and meet the certain milestones that the institution set place, I eventually was placed at a lower level security facility for good conduct, good behavior. And I had came across someone that I had met years before. And I recognized this person. This person was, at that time when I first met him, heavily involved in the prison culture, not caring about rehabilitation or spirituality, very closed-minded, violent, to say the least. And I remember I asked him, like, hey, you know, good to see you again. And I called him by his gang moniker, which is the name that I only knew him by. And he responded with, oh, that's not my name. I said, well, wait a minute, but that's what you told me. That's how I always knew you by. That's what you introduced yourself to me with. And he goes, yeah, that was before. That was a different life, but that was never me. That was a mask, a social mask. So he started to mention some of these words that were the first time that I came across this type of language. Social mask. So that caught my attention. So as we started to, and I didn't take him serious at first, and I said, are you serious? You're really, so what's your name? And he told me his name, his real name. And I said, my name is Alex. I said, okay. And then, so I asked him, how you been? He says, I've been doing really good, man. I've been doing a lot of self-help, you know, building my self-awareness. So once again, there was that other word, the new language, self-awareness. So what is that? I didn't ask any further, but it did catch my attention. And at that point, he started to tell me, you have to go to groups. This is a prison that's all about rehabilitation. It's not like before. It's a shift. They're changing. You have to do the work. So then that's when I asked, like, what do you mean? And he said, well, there's groups on victims awareness, victims impact. There's anger management. There's criminal thinking. There's AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, self-awareness groups. And he mentioned this particular group. He goes, by the way, as a matter of fact, we're having a workshop coming soon. It's a weekend workshop. I said, what do you mean by that? He said, well, it's called the Freedom to Choose Project Workshop. He goes, so sign up for it. Now, I had just arrived at this institution, talking to someone that I knew who was totally different than the person that I'm speaking to in front of me. So I was very hesitant. And also, too, I struggled with low self-esteem and insecurities and what people thought of me. And living in an environment such as prison, you really just built walls. I built walls a lot higher and thicker than I already had when I came into prison. So I let it be. And about a couple weeks later, I get a pass to go to a gym for a workshop. Something that I didn't sign up for. And sure enough, Alex had signed me up for it. So I went to the prison. I went to the gym, excuse me. And I walked with him and I stood by his side. Like if he was my big brother, a mentor of mine. Not knowing to him, of course. And he says, just trust the process. Trust the process. They're going to be talking about emotions, communication, respect. They're going to be talking about your inner child and how to heal that. So now I was really, really hesitant and quite honestly, even fearful. But he said the word, trust the process. He goes, these are good people. They come from outside to help us, to serve us, to support us. So I walked into the gym. I saw over 65, 70 people in the gym. They all had smiles. They all greeted you with a handshake, which was unheard of at the time. For someone from the outside world, from the free world, to be able to shake your hand and then call you by your first name. Because all you knew or all you had been called by was by your last name. So the volunteers called you by your first name and they had such a warm, genuine, authentic smile. And they greeted you like if you had just received an award. And they welcomed you into the gym. In the gym, very nervous, scared, confused. But nevertheless, I always kept in mind, trust the process. So as I sat down and I got to do my first trio with him, because I did not let him by my side. And I got to see him model and open up and share things that were revealing that I had never thought of. At that point, that's what really started to make me think, this is interesting. Over the course of Saturday, we worked on some handouts and some exercises. I went into different trios, but all within the Spanish-speaking community. That's where I felt the safest. Afterwards, there was people that got up and they shared and they gave their learnings with the whole gym. And they're talking about over 200 people there in gym from all walks of life, all demographics, all social classes. And I thought, wow, this is different. It feels so warm, so loving. I went back to the room that I was in and I shared this with one of my roommates. And he didn't quite know what it was either, but he saw the excitement in me. Sunday morning, I go back and instead of being in the Spanish-speaking community where I felt safest, I wanted to explore more. So I would walk around and I just sit down. And I told myself, whoever is on my left, whoever is on my right, that means it's meant to be. And I did other trio exercises with other volunteers. And it was until the last exercise of Sunday afternoon and the very last handout that as I was speaking to one of the volunteers and someone else that I had also known in this trio format, and I was sharing, I came to the realization that all I had been wanting and searching my entire childhood and my young adulthood was unconditional love. Unconditional love to feel safe and that I'm worthy. And when I was able to share that, that's where I broke down in tears. I broke down in front of a volunteer that I've never met before. And she also cried with me. And someone who was also to my left, who you would think is maybe one of the hardest criminals or maybe very quiet, very to himself, who had also built walls. He too is also crying. And to come to a circle or to a trio and just to be able to open up and cry like a baby. That was a cleansing. That was the start of my healing, start of my journey to explore and go deeper into who truly I am. And I start to unpeel the layers of all the hurt and the trauma and the abuses that I had experienced. And I went back home, I went back to the room later on that afternoon. And as I sat down on my bunk, I started to think and contemplate on how uplifting. My load got a little bit lighter. And as I went to sleep, I wanted more. And fortunate for me, a few months later, Freedom to Choose Project was able to start its very first group, monthly group at that institution that I was in. And I was fortunate to be one of the first ones in the cohort. This started in 2017, and I was in each and every group and workshop all the way until I got released a couple of years ago.
Wow. I'm sorry, I've been holding back tears, and I know that our listeners can't see, but you guys, if you could see the grin or the smile on my face at hearing both Rhonda and Eddie's story and this, you know, these kind of aha moments or these, you know, I can't stop, you know, my mouth won't stop turning up. It's just such a beautiful story. And it's like, it's meant to be. It was meant to be for both of you to, I don't want to say end up in those in prison, but it was just something meant to be for both of you to find Freedom to Choose Project. I mean, you both said that you were given life sentences, and here you are. Here you are today. And I just am, I just find that so amazing. It's just so beautiful to me. And Eddie, I'm looking at you, and you're looking up, and I see such gratefulness and gratitude. And it's like you're just looking out the universe, just praising, you know, just praising the universe for this change that you had in your perspective. So you both went through the program, and I'm going, you know, off script here. You both went through the program, and somebody somewhere said they noticed. How did that come about? I mean, how did you go from almost the equivalent of two life sentences to where you are today?
You know, I often wonder that too, because I was involved in a high-speed chase and a shootout with police officers and with two of my childhood friends. One of them subsequently died a week later in another high-speed chase doing the same thing. The other one was never caught. So they gave me, nobody was hurt in my crime, thankfully, but I received a life sentence with like a 36-year enhancement, another 10-year enhancement. There was so much that I should have not paroled ever. And when I went to prison, everybody told me, like, you have a case against police officers, you're never paroling. And I bought into that and I believed that in the beginning. And when I started working on myself and I started attending the weekend workshops, you know, every 6 months I went. And then right after the first couple, me and a group of my friends, we actually taught this in pre-release on a regular basis. So we started being of service immediately and developing programs inside of Valley State Prison to give back. And we also were educated in a lot of other courses and classes came in over the years. So we got a lot of training and we gave it back on a regular basis. When I started doing the workshop, they have like this ideal scene in the the power of your intentions and your purpose for your life. And I felt like, because I was working on my self-esteem, I wanted to like create this scene, but also this way of living my life that I didn't have an end in mind. I just said, I'm going to do the very best I can to rebuild my foundation on love, compassion, and truth. And I am going to do my very best to show up every single day for myself and my community.
And not thinking you were going to get out, though. You wanted to show up for your community inside of prison. And that is the person you wanted to be, with the understanding in your mind that that was, you weren't going to get out, but you were still going to do your best and be your best for everyone around you.
Absolutely.
That's beautiful.
So I lived my life that way. I did everything I wanted to do. I went to school. I went to college. I helped people. I became a tutor, a mentor. I started some self-help classes, domestic violence classes. And then after years and years of doing this work, I was just sitting on my bed one day and the counselor came to my door and he said,
it's okay.
He said,
it's a big moment.
Yeah, I was finishing up some of my college homework and he said, you might want to come down off your bed for this. And I put my books down. I got down and I walked over there and I was like, what's wrong? You know, the only reason the counselor comes is usually for like a death notice. So, or to have you sign your paper for classification, but it wasn't time for classification. So in my mind, I was like, I just lost somebody. But that's not what he was saying. He came and he told me, can you be prepared to go to the board in 3 months? Now, my mouth was hanging open. I'm like, there's got to be a mistake. Like, I'm not scheduled to go to the board until like 2060 something. There's a mistake. So he goes, there's no mistake. Do you want me to double check it? I'm like, yeah, double check it. That's a mistake. So he left and he came back a little while later and he goes, there's no mistake. Here's your paperwork. You're going. And they had passed a law about rehabilitation. If you had done over a 20-year period in prison and you had participated in rehabilitation and you had done, you know, hadn't gotten in trouble, had done things for yourself, then they were going to review your sentence. But the way that they do that for lifers is send you to the board of parole hearings. And the thing is that most people spend like years getting ready for their board hearing because it's a pretty grueling process. And I had lived my life in such a way that I felt like I was getting ready for that hearing every day about those 28 years. And everybody told me nobody with a case against police officers goes home at their first board hearing. And I said, okay, well, then that might not be. I'm just going to do my best. And I didn't get my hopes up. I just said, I'm going to go in there and I'm going to be the best that I could be and be as authentic and honest. And whatever happens from that point, you know, it's in God's hands. And I went in there and I had heard, like most people that were going to the board, their hearings were like between 4 and 5 hours with a break in between and sometimes longer. Mine lasted just a little bit over an hour and a half with their deliberation. And I was found suitable.
Wow. Oh, and, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that had to be the best moment in your life, maybe up to that point. I mean, oh, my gosh. Thank you for sharing that. Wow. Eddie, how about you? What was that? I mean, you didn't expect to be out, right?
No. When I first went into prison, what the guys that were there and along with the administration, what was always said is that the only way you're going to leave prison is in a pine box. So that was, it's the battlefield of the mind when you go in. Well, and when I first went in at that time, and that's all you heard is the only way you're leaving is in a pine box. So what hope or meaning does someone have while you're there when there is no light at the end of the tunnel? And I remember one of the several aha moments that I've had was in a retreat. Someone took a $100 bill and, you know, they tore a corner off it. They crumbled it. They folded the $100 bill. They stepped on it. They add a little bit of water to it. And he asked, would any of you take a $100 bill? And everyone raised their hand. And said, why? Isn't it dirty? It's been folded, crumbled up, a little corner is torn. Well, we all said, well, because it still is worth something. So then he said, well, if this $100 bill is worth the $100 bills, no matter what it's been through, how much more are you worth? How much value do you have that are worth more than a $100 bill? That right there was like so profound for me. And then being able to reach out to certain people that I met and over the course of the years in conversations. But more importantly, when I came to Freedom to Choose, there was something by one of the volunteers who still participates to this day at the institution that I was released from. He told me, you made a decision. You made a choice. That is not who you are. You were born with the spiritual nature for inner goodness and peace and love.
That's exactly right.
Now, something happened along the way that distorted your thinking, clouded your judgment, influenced you, right? You started to see the world with a tainted pair of lens. But that is not who you were born, right? You made a choice. That does not define you. That was what you made before. Who are you today? What choices you make today? So when I had deeper conversations with the volunteer and also doing the work and reminding myself that this is the battlefield of the mind, either I could choose to be in here and leave in a pine box, or choose to have that hope and have that faith that I will not die in prison. And I started to visualize myself coming back home, wearing certain clothes, going to a particular restaurant, which was one of my favorite spots to eat, smelling what the kind of cologne that I wanted to smell, seeing the people, hugging the people that I wanted to hug. And so that visualization was to me a form of a manifestation. How it was going to manifest itself, I didn't know. How were things going to work out? Quite didn't know either. I just knew that I had to do the work and I had to make the choice. Start making those little choices. Start sowing the good seed now in here. So that way, whenever that opportunity comes, now you can reap what you sowed. And that's how I took the approach of being in serving my sentence and getting involved with groups, furthering my education through college. That once it was offered, completed several vocations, became a clerk, became a teacher's aide, continued in my spiritual journey, and be a pillar of the community that I was in. Along the way, I became a mentor for a lot of the young men that were there, and that sense of purpose was meaningful. And I started to see the light at the end of the tunnel. And what really did it for me is when I saw in one of the Freedom to Choose workshops, someone who was formerly incarcerated, an alumni of the program, come back and said, I used to sit in one of those chairs.
Was that Eric? Can I ask you, is that Eric?
It wasn't Eric. It was someone else.
It was someone else. See, and that's even, that says a lot. It wasn't the Eric that I know that introduced me to FTC. So here was someone else as well.
Correct.
Who has gone through the program, has joined the project and come back to work with incarcerated people.
And I remember seeing that person and how he looked, the watch that he wore, his posture, his smile, his everything, his aura. And I said, wow, that can be me. And then that is going to be me. And that further propelled me to continue on the path that I was in. And then that's what I know, like, you know, I'm on the right path. It's just a matter of time. Trust the process. Trust the process.
I love it. I love it. I love it. Thank you both for sharing. So, of course, you now both work for Freedom to Choose. And I wonder, how does it feel for you to work in the program that helped you gain a different perspective in life and that helped you regain your freedom?
I can't even put into words how honored and how grateful I am to be able to do the work that I do. And currently, I'm partnering with Eddie. We manage the self-directed reading team for Spanish and English. And funny thing is, those letters that I mentioned that I used to get while I was in prison, I have a stack of those that I keep on my desk. Some of them are like 20 years old because maybe one person said something very uplifting and kind to me. And I treasured that letter so much that I never threw them away. And now I work with a program that does a correspondence with our incarcerated individuals who participate, and our volunteers give positive, uplifting feedback through the mail, through letters. So the thing that impacted my life so much, now I get to be a part of paying that forward as it impacts other people's lives. And as I do the training with our new readers, I come from a perspective of being somebody who received that unconditional love and non-judgmental support and upliftment through some of the darkest years of my life. So gratitude seems like such a small word for that.
Thank you, Rhonda. And Eddie, how about you? I see you tearing up a little bit.
I know for me, when I was getting closer for the opportunity to be released, and now it was a realization, you know, there was a lot more rehabilitation programs, vocation programs. The administration also was leaning towards more of a restorative justice program and rehabilitation. So now it was real. I had the opportunity to be released. Never did I ever think that I would be working with the institutions or with the prisons. Never did I ever think that I would go back to prison, much less be involved in any self-help groups with the guys that are there. And for me, I just wanted to go back and just be able to restore the relationships and, you know, be an asset to the community, right all the wrongs that I had made in the past. And when I was released, ironically, one of the guys that I met while I was there working the process, working the handouts, the exercises with the Freedom to Choose project, he was also released years before I did. And they mentioned, hey, there's a guy that used to work in Freedom to Choose, so he was heavily involved. And they mentioned my name to him. And he said, I know him. I actually got to work and process and work the inner child in the healing and reframing and confirming understanding, all these exercises that we used to do, we worked on with him. And he said, you know him? Because, yeah, I know him. I know him from inside prison. We worked together in the Freedom to Choose project. So we communicated, and he asked me, he goes, would you like to, start being part of an internship program? And I said, well, what does this entail? And he was extremely supportive all along the way. And I started off doing some internship program, helping me with some computer skills, you know, fine tuning those. And then he said, you know, we would like to offer you a part-time employment and develop a Spanish curriculum for the Spanish speaking population in prison. And that's how it started. And never did I ever think that I would be going back to prison. And just recently, about 4 months ago, I went back to the prison that I was released to be able to do a workshop with the Freedom to Choose Project and speak to the guys, that some of them that I met and that are still there, and some of the new guys. So just to be able to go back full circle and support them and be maybe a light to them, just like that one person that went while I was at the workshop and what I saw in him. So it's come just so full circle. But more importantly to me, it's part of my living amends.
Paying it forward. You're paying it forward.
Yes. Yeah. So if there's anything, if there's a way that you can script it, I think for me, this is how you would script it, which is paying it forward, making a living amends for all the wrongs that I've done and doing what's right and being pro-social.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank both of you for sharing. Wow. Great stories great stories that you're telling here, and these are your lives, and I'm so glad to know you. I'm so glad to know you both, and I'm glad that we work at Freedom to Choose together. So, Eddie, you talked a little bit about this. Can you describe the work that Freedom to Choose does in-house, or Rhonda, if you could, in-house versus the self-guided lessons? Talk about how the self-guided lessons came about.
Well, the person that I had worked with while I was incarcerated, and we were both in Freedom to Choose, and he was released. He was released during COVID, and he saw the need for the development of a self-directed learning program. Because of COVID and how everything was shut down, Freedom to Choose Project, along with other rehabilitation programs, were no longer being held in the institutions throughout the state. There was no longer any in-person classes, whether it be from maybe some college classes, some rehabilitation, any type of retreats. So he was released and he saw the need, and now he was working with Freedom to Choose as an alumni. And him, along with the founder of the program, developed a self-directed learning program, a mail correspondence program. And it's a one-year program that they're able to mail to the participants, both men and women, and they're able to work on it on their own pace. And based on working it on their own pace and their own comfort level, no matter where they're at in the spectrum of their journey of rehabilitation, they're able to respond to a series of questions and exercises and some tools. And once they're done and it's completed, they send it to the office and they make it available for us to be able to pass out to the lovely volunteers that we have. And the volunteers are now able to provide feedback to the participants in a loving, compassionate, non-judgmental way for deeper exploration and for deeper introspection. So it's something, we don't call it homework. Nobody likes that word homework. So we call it growth work. This is all growth work for the person's journey in life. And to be able to support them in their healing process and in their self-awareness and their attunement, it's just awesome. And it's all done through correspondence.
So what happens is I'm a volunteer reader, as you know. I came into the program just over 3 years ago. And I can tell you that as I provide feedback and try and provide some guidance in uplifting words, I grow. When I say, I wonder if you might consider which tool is more important for you in this moment, I think about what tool I need when I'm struggling. And over the years of doing this and reading the growth works, I can tell you, practice, 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 trying to help someone else has helped me. And I think this is just one of the best programs. And I also have heard, because we do in our Zoom meetings, our monthly Zoom meetings, some feedback from people who have received the feedback that I and other volunteers have provided. And it just touches my heart sometimes when you read some of what some of them say, and such as, I never had anyone tell me I was worthy before. And sometimes I cry because I think I had a rough childhood. You guys know me a little bit. You know some of what's going on. I've talked, and now anyone who listens to my podcast knows some tough stuff I've talked about. But I always felt that I was worthy. I was told by my mother that I was worthy, and I'm glad that I'm now telling other people that they are worthy. I'm glad I'm a part of the process for someone to find self-worth. God bless you. God bless you for this program. So I'm uncertain if I can ask you this. I know the program is currently only in California, and it's such an excellent learning process for anyone, including me as the volunteer reader, to learn how to better use the coping tools that we all have within us. We're all born with these coping tools. It's circumstances of life, and I've talked about this in my prior episodes, of whether we are taught to use them. As we're growing up, and if we weren't taught to use them, when we become more mature, we must learn to use them in order to have healthy relationships, and that is what the program is about. Will the program be available in other states? And I ask this because I think it is so beneficial. Will it be nationwide? I think it should be worldwide.
We've launched. In Australia, we have a small project going there where Anne talks about Florida, a possibility, New Mexico. So we're starting to branch out a little bit. As you know, Freedom to Choose has been a small volunteer-run organization for the past 20 years. And in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, we've grown. Like, we've been able to expand with, you know, Eddie, myself, Eric, we've expanded the alumni part of it. And then we've expanded a few more positions within the organization, which allows us to reach out a little bit further. Because as you can imagine, just being in the prisons that we're in, I believe we're at 7 or 8 now. And what we do is we do an IG group weekly. We get in most every prison, and we go in for 2 large workshops every 6 months. But when you add all those prisons together, it's a lot of work. So expansion takes some time. We've expanded into the Santa Barbara County Jail. We're getting ready to expand into the Santa Maria County Jail. So our jail outreach is going. And we're hoping, you know, to expand into more prisons in the state of California and get the capacity of volunteers, because that's what it would take. It would take an increase of volunteers to be able to reach out to the prisons and bring in that growth work, because, as you know, we need volunteers to provide like meaningful, non-judgmental, loving, supportive feedback and have a passion for that sort of work. And then we would have to have a volunteer base to be able to reach these prisons. So the volunteer bases would have to come from like the individual states where we're setting up workshops every 6 months. We need usually between, depending on the size and the place of the prison and what they allow us to utilize. Like, do they have a gymnasium? Can we bring 100 volunteers and do 200 participants? Like, that is a huge undertaking that we're doing currently in California. And it would be a huge undertaking to create that volunteer base outside of California. But there's no doubt we could do that.
I believe in you. I believe in it. And hopefully this podcast will help get some more word out. Let's hope people will listen and just get how important it is. So I'm going to end there with the questions and mention to you that I talk about this in my book. I love silly jokes and I love music. I have used them as coping methods throughout my life. And today is like none other. I have my silly joke. So here's my head to the palm of the hand because it's so silly joke for you. And it's especially for you guys because you're in California. Why do you smear peanut butter on the road? To go with the traffic jam. thank you for laughing. Not everybody laughs.
If it can make the traffic jam go a lot smoother and faster, then I'm all for it.
No we pun need jars intended. Of peanut butter. That's funny. Do either of you have a joke for me?
I do. I have one that I use for my granddaughter all the time. What do you call a fake noodle? An impasta.
I love that one.
she absolutely loves spaghetti. So that is like our ongoing joke.
That's a good one. That's a good one. How about you, Eddie? You have one?
So in the season or in the week of Valentine's?
Yes.
I remember one that comes to mind. And it's, how did the telephone propose to his girlfriend? How? He gave her a ring.
I love it. Oh, thank you both for being willing to give me a joke. I love those. Oh, that just made my day. So my song for this podcast is one that I mentioned in my book specifically near the end as I was making a vast transition in my perspective on the word acceptance. Oxford Languages Dictionary defines acceptance as the action of consenting to receive or undertake something offered. So what does this mean? It means life offers bad things sometimes, but life also offers good things, and we must accept life as it happens. Because there are moments and events out of our control, even as we work to control our emotions and how we act in various circumstances. I love Michael Franti, and I love his song, Good Shit Happens, because it reminds me to let the good stuff and the bad stuff happen, to go with the flow and flex our thinking if we need to. Because Viktor Frankl writes in his book, Man's Search for Meaning, and I'm paraphrasing, we have the power in that space between our trigger and our response to learn to choose the best response. So give Good Shit Happens a listen. Do you guys have songs that were important to you or resonated with you while you're incarcerated or since you've been come out into free society? Are there any ones that work for you?
Mine would be by Faith Hill, and it's called I'm Free. And I listened to that song a lot when I was inside of prison. I probably wore out this CD. And it just was a reminder that, like, I was free no matter what was around me, no matter the barbed wire offenses, I was still free. It was a choice.
That's great. That's a good one. Very appropriate. Mm-hmm. How about you, Eddie?
For me, there was a song by War that, I don't know if this is the name of the song, but I know it's Don't Let No One Get You Down.
Oh, yeah.
And it had a spiritual meaning for me.
I love that.
So it's Don't Let No One Get You Down and I Will Be Around.
I love that.
So in the spiritual context, it's like I'm never alone.
I love it. Oh, thank you both for sharing your songs as well. And let's say thank you for being here. Again, I feel honored, and I feel so honored that you shared your stories and your experiences with me. Thank you.
We're honored to have you as a volunteer to support us.
I'm honored to be one.
It is such an honor working with you, Lauren.
Thank you. So I want to say something, and I haven't mentioned this on other podcasts, but this is my last episode in a series of six, so I'd like to explain something. When I began to write, my sole purpose was to be as raw and honest as I could be, because I had the single intention that I wanted to have my life story in every psychology program for anyone wanting to specialize in working with clients who have been through trauma, and especially early childhood traumas, and even adult severe traumas. I was sure my story would have no real interest in mainstream society. It was my original editor, Robert, who suggested to me that my story could, in fact, help others outside of mental health studies, especially because of how I chose to write my book, to include coping methods I've used over the years, and healing methods, some that are unconventional, like the use of acupuncture and psilocybin mushroom therapy. I assure you that mere 3 years ago, I never would have thought I would do a series of six podcast episodes with the topics I've discussed or in the way I have freely discussed them. I've done this, and I'm going to be honest, to promote my book, my story. But more importantly, I decided I wanted to further educate about the always current topics such as trauma, family estrangement, and unbelievably, ways to tell if your drink has been spiked with a drug. I never thought I would openly discuss that. I do hope that some of my listeners have been helped or at the least comforted to learn that you are not alone. We are not alone. Our feelings are valid, and especially, I hope that you believe that we are more than the traumas that have happened to us or that we have caused. We are cashiers, we are salesmen, we are mothers and fathers and artists and cooks. We are volunteers wanting to help others, and in the process of helping others, we help ourselves. Thanks for listening to Flying Over the Hedge with your host, that's me, J. Lauren Sangster, author of the newly released book titled The Girl Who Flew Over the Honeysuckle Hedge, Her Lifelong Journey of Coping and Healing with CPTSD. Remember, I am not a mental health professional, but I am someone who has experienced a significant amount of trauma, who is discussing my experiences, the effects of those experiences, coping methods, and healing. If you or someone you know has experienced trauma and you are having difficulty coping, I encourage you to seek help with a mental health professional. My call to action is practice self-compassion. What does that mean? It means responding to yourself with understanding and kindness, especially when you make a mistake, and we all make mistakes. Again, for more information, including a page of websites I mentioned during my podcast, please visit flyingoverthehedge.com. Remember to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you like to listen to podcasts. Thank you.
Produced by AutoVita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.